we see the word tevel in Tanakh, af tikon tevel bal timot. So we think it means planet Earth, possibly the universe. We don't believe that the Earth is going to destroy itself. We don't believe in Armageddon prophecies. We have moral responsibilities to protect our world because Hashem entrusted us. So we have a moral, religious responsibility, but we don't worry about the fact that the world's going to fall apart because we have a haftacha pretty much from the door of Noach after the Mabul. Hashem will not allow the world to be destroyed again, at least without throughout the duration of history. So Af Tikon, Tevel, Hashem made Tevel, Hashem made the world, Baal Timoth. So the word Tevel that appears, we'll say this tonight, in common jargon means the world, the planet, maybe the universe. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai found the pasuk in Mishlei, which he thought the word Tevel means Eretz Yisrael, which is very, very symbolic that the same word to describe the entire planet should also describe Eretz Yisrael, because we believe, at least according to one position, Eretz Yisrael was the core from which the entire world was created. That's why it's called Evan HaShatiyah. The stone is called Evan HaShatiyah, She'alav Hushtata Olam. That was where the world was built around. But how can the word Tevel or Tevel describe Eretz Yisrael? So it's a bottom Gemara, it's a Sifri. Mishrim Bayochai Omer, Tevel Zu Eretz Yisrael. Which pasuk? What's the pasuk in Mishlei? Shenemar misacheches betevel artzo. Hashem gave us things to make us happy. One thing he gave to make happy is Torah. And he gave us tevel, artzo, his land, to make us happy. Lesachek bo. Why is Eretz Yisrael called tevel? Very interesting. Lama nikra shmo tevel, shehi mituvelas bakol. Tevel means spices. Israel has a little bit of every spice. First page, by the way. Right? The page starts with the word Talmud Bavli, right? Okay, bottom. Mituvelas bakol. Shekol ha'aratzos. If you look at every country in the world, yesh bazu mashayim bazu. Some countries have mountains, they don't have deserts. Some have deserts, they don't have mountains. Some have coastlines, they don't have rivers. Some have rivers, they don't have forests. Some have forests. Eretz Yisrael, ein chaser klum. You can start off in Kiryat Shmona, take a 7-8 hour drive to Eilat, a little longer, probably about 9 hour drive to Eilat, and basically hit every climate, every region, every topography. It's like a microcosm of the entire planet. Hashem took an entire planet of very different climates, regions, topography. Imagine you can start the morning and go skiing in the Hermon and end up the evening and go scuba diving in Eilat. So Hashem took this wide range of climates in our world and shrunk them into a little land called Eretz Yisrael, right? You were probably up north yesterday. I saw a lot of interesting different climates and regions and views and mountains and... Right, so you have terrible, terribly hot deserts, and then 20 minutes away, you're in the middle of a forest or a lush waterway. So Hashem created a mini Tevel in Eretz Yisrael by spicing it, Milashen Tavlin, with all the different climates. So this he said in terms of loving Eretz Yisrael and his care for Eretz Yisrael. I'll just let you know, just to place Rav Shimon Bar Yochai in context, Rav Shimon Bar Yochai was Rabbi Akiva's primary Talmud. Which means that it was more or less the fourth generation. Remember we talked about who was Rabbi Akiva's Rebbe, you remember? Rabbi Yeshua ben Eliezer. Who was Rabbi Eliezer's Rebbe? Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Who was Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's Rebbe? Hillel. So you have Hillel, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, Eliezer, Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Akiva, and then you have Rabbi Tarfon. So four or fifth generation. They, of course, lived through the Churban Beis HaMikdash. Rabbi Akiva, unfortunately, after the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, had to spend a lot of time in Rome interceding on behalf of the Jewish people. He was the delegate who went to Rome, like the Benjamin Franklin went to England to plead on behalf of the colonies. So he went to Rome to plead on behalf of Am Yisrael and to get them their rights and their needs and their defense from Rome. And his Talmud, Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, had to accompany him a lot. In fact, according to one version, he was actually jailed. And the Medrash says that there was a Talmud who used to come bring him to El Sadaim every day, bring him food. That Talmud is Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. So Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, with all of his love for Eretz Yisrael, was forced to leave at a certain point. Which makes the next Gemara also fascinating. It's a medrash. Ma'ase b'Talmud Echad. It's on page 2, Shmos Rabbah. Shem Shirin Bar Yochai Shiyatza Chutz La'aretz. He went to Chutz La'aretz. Uva'ashu. He came back, he was loaded. He hit the big time. He came back, he was rich. So all of Rav Shirin Bar Yochai's Israeli Talmidim were jealous. Because the guy came back from Chutz La'aretz and he was loaded. V'hayu Talmidim, line number 2, Ra'an Asel, Mekanimba. They were all jealous. And all the Talmidim said, we should also go to Chutz La'aretz. So go sell Dead Sea minerals in the malls and we'll make a lot of money. So all of a sudden, all these Israeli Talmidim are looking to go to Chutz La'aretz and get visas. So Rav Shimon was really angry. But listen to how he tried to, try to instruct them. Yad Rav Shimon v'hotzion lebika achas. Rav Shimon now goes and takes his all his talmidim out to a valley in Eretz Yisrael. And of course, here's where you have Rav Shimon bar Yochai as the origin of the Zohar and as a miracle performer, right? You don't have this too often with Chazal. He goes out to a biki of Pagi Madon. Goes to a place called Pagi Madon, line 4. V'nispalel, he begins to daven. The Amr, and he says, Bika, Bika, valley, mil'i dinrei zahav. I want you to all of a sudden produce gold. Hischila moshechas dinrei zahav afem. All of a sudden, abracadabra, the entire valley is filled with gold. This is in Israel. He turns to his Talmidim and says something very provocative. Amr lahem, im zav atem mevakshim, you want gold? You don't have to go to Chutzlar. It's Harei Zav. It's right here. Tzlilachem, take gold. But you can't, you're making a deal with the devil. You take the gold, he says, Elahayu Yodim, you should know. Kol mishu notel achshav, if you take your gold now, chelkosh olam haba hu notel. You're going to deplete your olam haba. So choose wisely. You can take the gold. But if you take this gold, it's going to come at the cost of your eternity. She'ein matan schar hatara el olam haba. And he quotes the pasuk, which we'll say tonight, Vatischak liyom acharon, we'll all laugh on the last day, meaning the last day, not the last day of our lives, but the last day of history when we're facing eternity, and we realize we hopefully made the right choice. So this was a tactic which Shimon employed to stop his Talmidim from mass immigration. But does he mean it in general, that every bit of luxury or pleasure or affluence or success that a person reaches in this world comes at the cost of his olam haba? And that would be the literal reading. He says, look, you can have gold, but it's going to cost you. Is that what we believe in? Or was he saying it in this context, where they'd be taking the gold because they would be disdaining Eretz Yisrael? You know, if you succeed in life, it doesn't come at the cost of your olam haba. But if you're disdaining Eretz Yisrael and you sell out Eretz Yisrael for monetary gain, then that comes to the cost, which is also an important statement. He said, look, you know, if you would have said we're going to stay in Eretz Yisrael, we want to be as wealthy as reasonably we expect to be, and we'll try our hardest, okay. But if all of a sudden one Talmud comes back from Chutzlar, it's loaded to the gills, and you want to run out, and then I give you gold in Eretz Yisrael, and your only interest is gold, not Eretz Yisrael, then perhaps it's going to deplete your olam haba. It's a very, very dramatic moment, and it's a very harsh statement of Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai to his Talmidim. You can take the gold, but just be careful, it's going to come at a cost.
You are amassing gold, but that gold that you are amassing is for olam haba.
Right, but why can't I have both? Why can't I amass gold and amass olam haba gold? Why does one have to come at the cost of the other? Right, you know, not everyone's going to have both, but if you have the ability to both, this would make it a crime to be wealthy. If you take this literally, anyone who's wealthy, you just watch this olam haba depleting, which obviously most of us don't believe in. So it has to be in a certain context of people that are trying to amass wealth at the cost of their love for Eretz Yisrael. Okay. One more statement of Rav Shimon bar Yochai about Eretz Yisrael, a very famous statement, the first page, the first source, in which Rav Shimon bar Yochai said, it's a Gemara in Brachos, there are three things which a person acquires through struggle and toil and suffering. Three things are niknes b'yisurin, Torah, Olam Haba, and Eretz Yisrael. And he quotes a pasuk for Torah, Kasher Yaser Ishes, Torah, it's Torah, line number 3, Ashrei hagever asher ti asrenu ya umitraschat lamdenu. Remember, in Tanakh, the word musar doesn't mean moral improvement. In Tanakh, the word musar means suffering. Ti asrenu. It'll make him suffer. So if a person is fortunate, if Hashem, first page, makes him suffer and teaches him Torah. Olam haba, the last pasuk, ki ner mitzvah v'torah or v'derech chayim tochos musar. Life is full of struggle. So to get to olam haba, you have to live in olam hazeh. Life is full of struggle, obviously, and suffering and toil. The big chiddush is Eretz Yisrael, right? If someone told you that you can only acquire Torah through struggle and suffering, that makes sense because Torah is eternal. Anything that's not part of this world, you have to struggle to get beyond it, right? I live my life in this world to have scrambled eggs on Friday morning and I don't have to struggle. That's part of life in this world. To go to sleep, I don't have to struggle. To buy a car, I don't have to struggle. But if I want to achieve something outside of this world, then I have to try to bump up, you know, my grade level. So that's struggle, that's toil, that's suffering. So if I want to achieve Olam Haba, that's struggle. If I want to achieve Torah, that's struggle. Eretz Yisrael, you'd think, is terrestrial. Eretz Yisrael, you'd think, is part of our world, part of our reality. I wouldn't have to struggle for Eretz Yisrael. Obviously, we know that not to be true. We know that because Eretz Yisrael is not just terrestrial, but metaphysically, something beyond our experience. So to acquire Eretz Yisrael, we have to struggle and work and sometimes even suffer. Interestingly enough, he didn't find the pasuk in Tanakh that explicitly associated Eretz Yisrael with Yisurin. Torah, this is a specific pasuk. Ashrei hagever asher tiasrenu ya. He found the pasuk about Olam Haba, that derech chayim tochach osmosa, to get to Olam Haba, you have to go through this world, which is, everyone's going to suffer at some point in this world. But about Eretz Yisrael, he had to find smichos apsukim. Look at the fourth line. Eretz Yisrael dechtiv ki kasher yaser ish espino Hashem lokecha miyasarecha. And the next pasuk talks about Eretz Yisrael. So the juxtaposition of pasuk A that talks about Yisurin, pasuk B that talks about Eretz Yisrael, taught him that Eretz Yisrael is something we can only acquire through Yisurim. And of course, there's no one better equipped than Rishim Bar Yochai to talk about the struggle to live in Eretz Yisrael, as we'll see later, spending 13 years in a cave because he was afraid of the Romans. One more piece about Eretz Yisrael. Let's go to Am Yisrael. Okay. Let's take a look at source number 3. Very important concept, because here you'll see the interface between what Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai said in the Medrash and what Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai said in Kabbalah. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai is attributed as the source of the Zohar. It's unclear as to how much of it he actually wrote or how much was written later, but he certainly was someone that invested very much and worked and articulated a lot of the ideas of Jewish Kabbalah, Jewish mysticism. One of the interesting and provocative ideas of Jewish mysticism is that, how should I say it? We live in a fallen world. Fallen world is not just because man sinned, but because we live in a world of division. And when we're divided, or anything is divided, it's not achdus, and achdus is a lower state, and a higher state is unification. Our senses, for example, are divided. We have sense of smell, sense of sound, sense of touch. But at one point, they were all integrated. And at a point in the middle, they also became integrated. Har Sinai, for example, we re-achieved a perfect stage so that we could see the sounds and hear the lightning. So that was an integration of sensory perception. That was a resurrection, so to speak, of what we had in Gan Eden, what perfect man will one day have, where our senses will all be integrated. That's all fine. That's all classic philosophical thought. But what makes Kabbalah very, very forward and provocative is there's another suffering based on disunity, and that's Hashem's Shekhinah. Because Hashem wanted to expose His Shekhinah, His presence, to our world. Our world was incapable of fully receiving Hashem's presence. Hashem's presence overspilled the world and got spread out to all these dark places. That in Kabbalah is called Shviras HaKelim. Have you ever heard of this? The breaking of the vessels. Hashem wanted to pour His presence into all these vessels. The vessels weren't strong enough to contain Hashem's presence, so the presence spilled out. And these all nitzotzos of Hashem's presence are all over the place in a divided world. And your purpose, to your avodas Hashem, is to unify Hashem's Shekhinah. And that's what, of course, makes Kabbalah very powerful / provocative. You're not just helping yourself or helping Am Yisrael, helping the world, you're also helping the Shekhinah. You're also contributing to the Shekhinah. The Shekhinah is suffering, and you're rebuilding the Shekhinah. Not just by doing mitzvahs, but by actively integrating. So, for example, just out of interest, does anyone here say before Sfiras Omer the following preface? L'shem yichud kutcha brichu. Did you have a shir about it, probably? Right, do you guys say it? It's in the Machzor. Did Rabbi Freeman give you a shir? Rabbi Shraver give you a shir? Okay. This is a Hasidic introduction to Sfiras Omer, which was very, very controversial, but somehow made its way into the Machzara. One of the areas which Hasidim, and Hasidim are a type or a form of Mekubalim, we're not going to talk about the difference right now between classic Kabbalah and Hasidic Kabbalah, but Hasidim are Mekubalim. So one of the areas or mitzvahs which they really thought could put them on the high road of Kabbalistic activity is Sfiras Omer. Why? Because Sfiras Omer is a 7x7 matrix. And 7x7 matrix is a perfect overlay for a very, very important Kabbalistic notion that though you can't interact with Hashem because He's infinite and unknowable, you can interact with the 7 spheres of emanation, the 7 ways that His presence emanates to our world and affects our world. Those are called spheres, spherot. So Sfiras Omer was basically a way to climb up those 7 emanations and then reach Shavuos, which is a direct encounter with the Ein Sof. So Sfiras Omer was Kabbalah and Chassidus at its best. So that's why in the end of each day, Kabbalah introduced a different climb up through the spheres. I don't say it, but some people say Hocha Benetzach, Hocha B'Tiferes. These are very, very deep Kabbalistic ideas. They're not just simple midos that you'd read out of a Mesillas Yesharim. Based on the Pasuk. The Pasuk that serves as the baseline, as the template for these 7 spheres is the Pasuk we recite every day in Tefillah in Vayivarech David. L'cha Hashem, Hagadula, Yagivura, Ve'tiferes, Ve'netzach, Ve'ahod, Kichol V'Hashemayim V'aretz. Kol is Hashem, There's six mentioned, one isn't mentioned, but those are the six, and those are more or less six out of the seven that fill that 7x7 matrix that was built around Sfiras HaOmer. So Sfiras HaOmer, for us, would just be Mekayim HaMitzvah based on the Torah. But Sfiras HaOmer from Mekubalim is essentially visiting these seven spheres, each sphere different week, each week seven different stages of visiting that sphere. And once you get through all those spheres, you're not just ready to meet Hashem. What you're really doing is you're reunifying Hashem's name and presence. How does the Chassid reunify Hashem's presence through Sfira? By introducing it with his agenda. L'shem, Yichud, Kucha, Brichu. I'm going to be Miyached, Hashem's split Shechina, and I'm going to create Ushchinte B'Dechila Rechim. Does anyone know that the Noda B'Yehuda, the leading non-Hasidic rabbinic figure in the 19th century, wrote a stinging responsa in which he banned anyone from saying this L'shem Yichud Kucha. He said it's equivalent to, I forget the words he uses, but significant theological crime. Because he was very, very opposed to this, and he wasn't the only one. So for many, 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 many years, people who were not Mekubalim avoided L'shem Yichud Kucha Brichu. Somehow it made its way into the Sfiras HaOmer. It's a very interesting sphere. Why did Sfiras HaOmer, why did the Mekubalim, so to speak, win? And in many Siddurim, the Shem Yechuchu appears. Obviously, people only know, since I'm not a Mekubal, I believe in Kabbalah, I'm just not a practicing Mekubal, so I don't say these things afterwards, and I don't say the Shem Yechuchu Brechu. But why this long-winded introduction? Because in the Zohar part of Reb Shimon's career, there's a lot of people affecting the Shechina, changing the Shechina, unifying the Shechina. With that in mind, let's read two pieces about Am Yisrael. Number one, source number three on page one. Tanya, Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai Omer, Bo urei kama chavivin Yisrael lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, how much Hashem loves Am Yisrael. Shebechol makom shegalu, any time we went into Galus, Shechina imahim, the Shechina went with us. Okay, this is called in Kabbalah, Shechinta begalusa. That when Am Yisrael suffers, the Shechina suffers and is geographically present in the Galus, not back in Eretz Yisrael, waiting for us to return. Galu leMitzrayim, Shechina imahim, shenema haneglo neglesi leveis avicha b'yosef b'mitzrayim. Galu leBavel, we went to Bavel, Shechina imahim, shenema haposek in Yeshaya, lemanchem shulachti Bavela. The af kishein asidim leGael, when we're redeemed, are you listening? Shechina imahim, the Shechina is also redeemed. The Torah doesn't say, v'hashev Hashem elokecha eshevuscha, it says, v'shav Hashem elokecha eshevuscha, Hashem will return also. So namely, when we suffer, the Shechina is also suffering. When we're in Galus, the Shechina is also in Galus. Does anyone know when this concept began in Tanakh? At which stage? When did Hashem introduce this, that He will go with us?
In our parsha.
It's in our parsha, but it starts much earlier. You see, we take this for granted because we've been trained and taught in this notion. For us, it's pretty simple. Someone once asked Rav Amital, where was God in the Holocaust? Where was God when you were in Auschwitz? Expecting Him to say, He abandoned me, He ignored me, He neglected me. And Rav Amital told him, who's with me in Auschwitz. So for us, this notion that where we are, Hashem is, and even when we suffer, Hashem is with us, and when we suffer, Hashem suffers, or the Shechina suffers, it's built into our DNA for thousands of years of tradition. But this is Rav Shimon bar Yochai building it into our DNA. Does it happen? Anyone know? Okay, it happens by Moshe. It happens. The first stage is Yaakov. Yaakov is terrified to leave Israel because he had to close way back to Laban and Esav the first time. Hashem tells him to go down and reunite with Yosef. He stops in Beersheba hoping for a reprieve because that's where Yitzchak went to. That was the outer limits of where Yitzchak went to. This is the most southerly point that Yitzchak, when he forms the covenant with Avimelech, he stops in Beersheba hoping that Hashem will say, you don't have to leave. Hashem says, don't worry, go down to Mitzrayim. And he says as follows, Anochi eredim cha Mitzrayim, I'm going to go down with you to Mitzrayim. V'anochi elche gam alo, and I'll come back up with you. That's where the notion of Shechinta Begalus is born. And then, of course, it happens with Moshe, and it happens later. But Rav Shimon bar Yochai, a thousand years later, is distilling, 1,500 years later, is distilling what Yaakov heard from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That where Am Yisrael goes, the Shechina is with him. There are other statements from Rav Shimon bar Yochai about the love of Am Yisrael. I'll just show you one other pseudo-Kabbalistic statement, and then we'll get to the famous story of Rav Shimon bar Yochai. Rav Shimon bar Yochai, the second to last piece on the first page, Kol HaOzer Es Yisrael, Ki'ilu Ozer Es HaShechina. You see, he's talking a lot about the Shechina and how Am Yisrael's experiences affect the Shechina. Whoever helps a Jew helps the Shechina. Shenamar quotes a pasuk in Shoftim. In Shoftim, Devora in Parakeh is handing out grades for those who performed well in the war with Midian and those who were lazy. So those who came early, gives them shevach. Those who didn't come or were late in coming, she gives them critique. So she's cursing a certain city that didn't come, didn't participate, which one? But she says, line number two, Oru Arur Yoshveha, the inhabitants of this city should be cursed. Kilo Bau Lezrat Hashem. They didn't come to help Hashem. That's what Devarah says. They didn't come to help Hashem. What do you mean? They didn't come to help you. They didn't come to help Am Yisrael. It's not a question of helping Hashem. The Chitzarachu L'siyu, Hashem needs your help. Elamentcha Shekola Ozer L'Yisrael, Kilo Ozer is Hashem. If you help Hashem, if you help Am Yisrael, it's like you're helping the Shechina. Again, this is not Kabbalah. This is normal stuff. We believe in this. When you help the Jewish people, you're helping the presence of the Shechina. Kabbalah takes it one step further. No, you can directly help the Shechina. You can directly touch the Shechina and change it. You see? That's the boundary between Nigla and Nister. In Nigla, okay, the Shechina is suffering because Am Yisrael is suffering. Presence of Hashem is reflected by Am Yisrael in our world. As Am Yisrael succeeds, Hashem's presence increases. That's the Kiddush Hashem. Things we've talked about a lot. And that's what these Midrashim illustrate. In Kabbalah, it becomes more direct. You can directly unify the Shechina through your davening, through going to the mikvah, through counting Sefiras HaOmer the right way. So that's where Kabbalah takes these ideas and increases the intensity. Okay, let's conclude with the famous story of Rav Shimon bar Yochai. So this is, of course, on page 2, towards the bottom. Okay, let's see how it started. Source number, paragraph 3 on page 2. Rav Shimon bar Yochai's nickname was Rosh HaMedabrim, who talk a lot. Rav Shimon talk a lot. Why is he called talk a lot? Because he opened his mouth in one context that got him into trouble. Okay, what happened? Amai kari le Rosh HaMedabrim b'chol makom. D'yasvi Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Yossi Rav Shimon v'yasvi Rabbi Yehuda ben Ger and Gabayu. At one point, there was a little meeting between Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Yossi, another Talmud Rabbi Akiva, and a Ger, Yehuda ben Gerim. Yehuda ben Gerim, line number 3, was saying, these Romans, they're great people. Come and noim maaseim shel umazu. Let's give the Romans credit. They built cardos, shopping centers, tiknu kusharim, they built bridges, tiknu merchatzos, they've built bathhouses. So they were recognizing this was finally a culture they could admire. Even though they were oppressing the Jewish people, they could admire them. I spoke with you a little bit Hanukkah time about what makes Hanukkah so crucial. It's the first time that Judaism came into conflict with a real civilization rather than barbarians, cannibals, flesh-eating, human-sacrificing, wild people. To defeat Canaan, Plishtim, Midian, Ashur, Bavel, Zoroastrians in Persia, that's not really a cultural battle of equals. That's a culture of Judaism which talks about enlightenment and ration and morality against barbarians. But all of a sudden, Judaism comes into conflict with Greece and Rome. These are civilizations that are enlightened, democratic, civilized, philosophical, ethical, moral, and that Judaism outlasted these two cultures is what we're celebrating kind of at the time. That basically, we can also contend with real civilizations, not just with barbarians. So here you have Yehuda ben Gerim saying something nice about the Romans, and we would pretty much agree with Yehuda ben Gerim. So what happens? Line number 4 of Biosi Shasak. Biosi is quiet, doesn't say anything. It's always good to be quiet. Rav Shimon bar Yochai, bit of a hothead, slams his fist down and he says, Nene Rav Shimon bar Yochai v'yomar, kol ma shetiknu. Whatever the Romans did, lo tiknu el tzarach atzma, they're not interested in a broader moral reality. They're interested in their own benefit, and they did it for their own interests. Tiknu shvachim lehoshib bem zonos. They're just interested in creating brothels. Merchatzos, bathhouses, la'adin b'hen atzma, to luxuriate, to indulge, to have a good time. Ksharim, litom hem mechas, to take taxes. Okay. Shocked. I was in the States a little bit before Pesach. To go over the Verrazano Bridge, I think it's $18 now or something. So, it's really high. Like, I turned to the Toltec, I said, you want my left arm? Because I don't think my leg. It's just, I give my first board. I think it's more than 11, right? It was, you can check it out, $12 just to go across the bridge. The truth is, Rav Shimon bar Yochai was correct. The Romans didn't have a larger moral sensitivity. And I'll tell you, I'm impressed, for example, with environmentalists. Okay. May not agree with them, but I'm impressed. If you're really worried about climate change, you're worrying about life 50 years from now in a world you'll never inhabit because you have a moral sensitivity that it's your responsibility not just to worry about yourself, but to worry about generations that will one day inhabit the earth. I'm impressed with that. That's moral awareness, moral consciousness. Our president of the United States, they get involved in wars, trillions of dollars, just to create moral equality, just to create democracy. Again, it could be foolhardy, it could be unwise, but just to sense that moral consideration is impressive. The Romans didn't have that. The Romans were pretty much concerned with one thing, building the Roman Empire. They built bridges to collect taxes. They built bridges to transport armies. There's no larger moral conception that we have to try to be a moral force in the world. So Rav Shimon bar Yochai was absolutely correct. He just shouldn't have said it. Because Yehuda ben Gerim, who was previously a Roman, spread the word amongst his prior friends. And Halach, second to last line, Yehuda ben Gerim, the Sipur Divrahim. He told others about the story. Nishmu l'malchus, ultimately the Caesar heard about it. He was really irate. So Amri said, Yehuda she'ila yisala. Yehuda, who said nice things about the Roman Empire, who was appointed to some office. Yossi Shashasaki Galalatsipari. Yossi was quiet, he didn't support. He has to walk, he has to run away from Yerushalayim, he has to go into a gulag in Tzipari. Remember when we were in Tzfat, we talked about how the north of Israel became a center for many of the Tanoim because conditions in Yerushalayim under Roman captivity were just too hard to handle. So they migrated north. A lot of their kvaros are up north. A lot of their gravesites are up north. So Yossi was someone who went to Tzipari. Yossi HaGlili went to Galil, became part of the Galil area, and was called the Yossi HaGlili. So there was this migration away from the center capital that the Romans had captured and was the seat of their throne, up north where things were a little freer. Of course, Rav Shimon bar Yochai ultimately makes it to Tzfat Miron as well. Rav Shimon bar Yochai, there was a bounty put out, whoever gets him, mihareg, he's Chayiv Misa. So what does Rav Shimon do? Azel hu ubrei, tasha ben midrasha. They go learn, we'll learn whatever life we have, at least let's learn Torah. So every day, his wife would bring him some food and drink. But kitakiv gzerasa, at a certain point, the gzera became so intense, everyone was looking for Shimon bar Yochai. He said, it's not fair to my wife. Here's an interesting irony. Because Shimon bar Yochai is one of the people in Shas who articulate nashim daitim kalos, that women are feeble-minded. But he says this to protect his wife. What does he say? Amale lebrei, nashim daitam kala, my wife is weak, dilma mitzari le megaliela. Maybe they'll grab her and they'll torture her to try to discover my identity. They know if they'll get my brother, he'll just die. But if they'll get my wife, they're going to torture her, chas v'shalom, they'll rape her, they'll abuse her. So I would rather relocate from a condition of comfort and live in a cave for 12 years than expose my wife to potential torture or to potential waterboarding or whatever. So he was trying to protect his wife, and he was commenting on the fact that in those days she wouldn't have the wherewithal to withhold the torture and whatever she'd be subjected to. So what happens is, he runs away, tashu bimarasa, he runs to a cave, israches nisha, a nes happens, Hashem makes sure that there's a carob tree that grows and a river that develops, but it wasn't comfortable. The Gemara says they developed sores on their body, they lived in a cave for 12 years, they weren't exactly living the high life. Anyway, let's just cut to the chase because we're running out of time. Third to last line. Isvu tracer shani bemarasa. They spent 12 years in the cave. Shimon and his son, Eliezer, Elazar Rib Shimon. 12 years in the cave. Asa Eliyahu v'kam apischa demarasa. After 12 years, Eliyahu comes and says, you can come out now. Man ledoi lebar yochi demis kesa rabatul gzeusa. Someone should tell Bar Yochai that the Caesar has died and his decrees have been repealed. Nafku, they went out of the cave. Chazu inish the kokarbi vizari. Shimon sees people that are planting and plowing. Amar, he's shocked. Manichim chaya olam ve'oskim b'chaya shah. How could they abandon eternity and work on transients? Kol makom shenos nimeinem yad nisraf. Wherever they look, people got incinerated. Yatzas abaskol v'amrolem. So the baskol comes out and says, that's why I sent you out of the cave. L'hachriv olam yitzasem. I sent you out of the cave to kill people because they don't live up to your standards. Chizru lemaraschem, go back to your cave. Hadar Azul, they go back to the cave. Yisivu tracer yarchi shata, they spend another 12 months there. Amri, so there's a baskol that says, Mishpat Risham Megehenim Shnei Masachadish, you only have to spend a year in Gehenim. Yes, a baskol v'yamrat se'umi maraschem, you can now go out. They spent a year in Gehenim. Nafku, they went out. Kol echad avimachi, Rebbe Lazar havimasri b'shema. Now his son, Rebbe Lazar, is still hot-headed. He still sees people working and he's upset. And Rav Shimon tries to mollify him. So Rav Shimon, the elder father, understood the message. Rav Elazar is still the kanoi, and he's angry when people are working. Amr lo bini, so Shimon tells his son Elazar, Dai li olam ani v'ata. It's enough that you and I are following the standard of full-time learning. Let people be. but they're still not placated. I'll just end with what finally placates Rabbi Elazar. Bahari Panya Demali Shabta, it was Erev Shabbos, Chaza Hu Saba, they saw an old man, the Havinakit Trey Medani Asa, was holding two sticks of Hadassim, Virayat Benash Mashas, he's running around Benash Mashas. Amrulay, they tell him, Hani Lamlach, why do you have these two Hadassim? Amrulay, he says, L'chvot Shabbos, I'm bringing home these two Hadassim so my house will smell better, L'chvot Shabbos. By the way, they ask him, why two? Tiskele Bechad, one should be enough. He says, Chad Kineget Zachar, Chad Kineget Shamar. This is the source of lighting two candles on Shabbos. The base amount we light is two candles. Some people light more. Each family member, the base amount is two, based on this Gemara. One for Zachar, one for Shamar. Amri Le Lebrei, Rav Shimon tells his son, Chazi kama chaviva mitzvah sa Yisrael. Look how much even regular Jews love mitzvahs. An old man, hard time running around, is running after Hadassim. What's on display here is obviously the challenge. On the one hand, to create higher standards that people will aspire to of Talmud Torah. On the other hand, to recognize that even those who don't aspire to them and they live good lives as Jews or keep mitzvahs, not to incinerate them, but to validate them. That's something we've talked about a lot in our community, in the Dati Lumi community. It's very hard because we validate so many values. It's hard to maintain a prioritization of values. What's the highest value? It's hard to create people in the Haredi world. There's only one value. So the advantage is that there's a heavy emphasis on achieving excellence in Talmud Torah. The disadvantage is if you don't achieve that, it's hard to feel validated, and you fall out of the system. In our system, we've got the reverse challenge. On the one hand, we want to create validity for everything. Oh, he's serving the army, he's a great hero, and he's helping out our society, he's a great hero, and he's doing this and doing that. But then how do we maintain? Yeah, but there's a certain prioritization of Torah and mitzvahs that has to come first on the, as the apogee of the pyramid. So here you see this challenge to create a society. On the one hand, where he says, you and I are going to be learning all day. On the other hand, these are people that are leading fulfilling lives, even though they're carrying out their normal routine because they're mechavev mitzvahs. There's a lot more to say, but it's one of the